case for argument this morning is United States against McKenzie. Mr. Stevenson.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Adam Stevenson, and I represent Appellant Mario Barber. Today, I'm also speaking on behalf of Appellant James McKenzie. In a single conspiracy, culminating in a single future act, in this case, a robbery of a drug stash house, an individual's own conduct should control their guidelines offense level, as opposed to future speculation based upon unreliable agent testimony. We will discuss this point in two ways. First, reasonable foreseeability does not apply to this case because that standard instead applies to the past actual conduct of co-defendants in furtherance of a conspiracy instead of speculation into the future. Second, the court should use an agreed-upon quantity standard to best reflect the defendant's weight-based culpability while restraining speculation and government sentencing influence and control. For both these reasons and the reasons contained in our briefs, appellants respectfully request that this court vacate their sentences and remand for further proceedings. Turning to my first point, reasonable foreseeability does not apply to this case. Under Guideline 1B1.3A1B, reasonable foreseeability applies to the other acts, conduct, and omissions of others in furtherance of the conspiracy, common scheme, or plan. In United States v. Edwards, a case in which this court described as the IBM of drug conspiracy networks, that standard acted to make all co-conspirators responsible for the other actual transactions that did occur in the ongoing activities of the drug conspiracy. In this case, there were no other pieces of conduct, no transactions. Instead, this case was to result in one final act, a robbery of a drug stash house. All parties acted together. There were no separate street-level drug sales or other transactions that could be included in this view of past reasonable foreseeability. In addition, reasonable foreseeability applies a subjective review under United States v. Edwards. In this case, the district court failed to properly conduct a subjective review for both appellants.
So let me just ask you this. What's the proper measure in a case like this where you say there's no agreed-upon amount? The defendants don't challenge their convictions, so there must be some drug quantity.
Correct, Your Honor. When a proper
And what drug quantity would you suggest for these defendants if it's not the 20 kilos?
If in this case where the only source of drug quantity evidence was the agent's statements, then there is no reliable proof as to drug quantity, and it would be the lowest guideline level possible. And therefore, it would be the bottom level of the guidelines for base offense level under 2D1.1.
And the amount then would be what?
The amount then, Your Honor, would be, unfortunately, I do not have that in front of me, and it escapes me at this particular point.
But you're saying where it should always go to the low end, the lowest guideline, if there's no other corroboration.
Correct. If there's no other corroborating evidence or evidence relating to quantity, then yes, Your Honor.
And do you have any case law to really support that proposition?
Unfortunately, Your Honor, at this time I do not. However, if the court would wish, I would be willing to file a supplemental brief on that point. With regard to subjective review, however, in United States v. Edwards, there are two points of consideration. First, the defendant or the district court should review the evidence in this case, the agent's statements, as the defendants did, as if it were statements by Lakito, the disgruntled drug courier, the ATF agent's undercover alter ego. In such a review, the district court would have found inconsistencies with regard to the drug quantity evidence, with numbers ranging from 5 to 10, 15, and 20, in addition to a statement with regard to who knows what may be in the actual stash house. In addition, this was a future stash house. Lakito purported to have no definitive evidence with regard to what would be at this future stash house. In addition, Lakito made several statements stating that he did not actually enter the drug quantity storage room. Instead, he stayed at the threshold while other individuals went and acquired the drugs in the back room. In addition, there was statements made by the co-defendants with regard to a prior robbery that had been conducted, where the defendants were led to believe that a high drug amount would be available at the house. However, upon arriving and conducting the robbery, there was significantly less taken in the completed act. Both of these, under a subjective review, would lead to a drug quantity other than the stated 20 kilograms. Turning to my second point, if reasonable foreseeability does not apply to this case.
Counsel, that line of argument actually worries me a little, right? If the argument in sentencing here is basically, we're businessmen, we do this kind of thing routinely, and we find that our clients always overstate how much money we can get from busting up a drug house, and the district judge believes that, it seems to me that two things happen. One, the district judge would lower the estimate of foreseeability here. But two, the district judge would have to add back in, as relevant conduct, everything that they had ever in their business careers as drug house thieves stolen. Now, would that help your client or hurt your client?
With regard to your second point first, Your Honor, it would help our clients because, again, that is how reasonable foreseeability should apply to this case. Past actual transactions that were part of the common scheme or plan would factor into the overall drug quantity determination. However, the charged conduct in this case, the future stash house robbery that was a result of the sting, was the only piece of
conduct. Relevant conduct includes the entire course of conduct, not just this crime. So if you succeed in knocking it down because your clients are professionals in this line of trade and they know that there are overestimates, you have to put back in everything else. And that, right, takes you back to my question. Is this going to help your clients or hurt your clients? You cannot have a defense that says, my clients were skeptical of 20 kilos because we got lots of experience and we know we never get the full estimated amount. You can't have that defense without putting in what they got on the rest of their business.
That may well be the case, Your Honor. However, this does address my second point with regard to, in this particular scenario, with regard to a single act conspiracy going forward, a district court should use agreed upon quantity, again, to restrain speculation into drug amounts into the future, and in addition, restrain government control over the initial drug quantities available. For instance, in this case, the government heavily relied upon a final statement just prior to the arrest that there would possibly be 20 kilograms again at this future stash house. That single unilateral statement can, in fact, set a defendant's statement under a future reasonable foreseeability analysis. However, under analogizing to 2D1.1 Application Note 12, a reverse buy-sell sting agreement, where the government acts as the supplier of narcotics, the guidelines reflect that it may be best to use what the defendant agreed to be involved in the transaction to avoid the government artificially inflating that amount at a later time. The same policy behind that guideline application note applies here, where the government can, in fact, set the initial terms, and in a unilateral statement just prior to arrest could, in fact, influence the defendant's offense-level guideline range via a single statement with regard to 20 kilograms or an increasing amount. Similarly, under Guideline 2X1.1, Comment 2, in an uncompleted bank robbery, defendants are generally not found liable for speculative findings with regard to the amount of money they hope to steal, $1 million, $2 million, whatever may be in the bank, because that is purely speculative. That is what we have here. We are several steps removed from a traditional drug conspiracy and drug distribution network. Instead, we have a robbery where the only difference between this and an uncompleted bank robbery is that the target is drugs instead of money. If there are no further questions, I will reserve the remaining portion of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Stevenson. Mr. Hogstrom.
May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Eric Hogstrom, and I represent the United States, the appellee in this appeal. In their plea agreements, or in Mr. Barber's plea agreement and in Mr. McKenzie's plea declaration, each defendant admitted to their participation in a narcotics conspiracy. They're not now disputing that they in fact, participated in a narcotics conspiracy.
Well, a drug conspiracy.
Correct.
Cocaine is not a narcotic.
You are correct, Your Honor. I apologize. At sentencing, the district court correctly applied the guideline provision applicable to drug conspiracies, which is 2D1.1, and the aggregate quantity and joint conduct principles set forth in 1B1.3. These provisions, as the district court correctly explained, provide that the guidelines range in a drug conspiracy is driven by the quantity of drugs reasonably foreseeable to each defendant as being the object of the conspiracy. The district court then thoroughly reviewed the record and noted numerous instances in which the defendants discussed their understanding that the stash house would contain 20 to 30 kilograms of cocaine. On this basis, the district court correctly found that each conspirator was responsible for 20 to 30 kilograms of cocaine. The district court committed no error either in its application of the guidelines or in its factual findings. Unless the court has further questions, the government will rest on its briefs.
Looks like there are none. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Stevenson?
The court has no further questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Stevenson. The court appreciates your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.